Okay, this week's parsha is Parshas Bahalaischa, Tavshin Ayin Ches. Vayidaber, we'll start from the beginning, page 774, Perek Ches Pasuk Aleph. Vayidaber Hashem El Mei Shalema, Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Daber Al Aaron Vamar to Elav, speak to Aaron and say to him, Bahalaischa Saneres, when you light the candles, Amopne Amenera, towards the front of the menorah, Yi'iru Shavas HaNeiros, shall the seven candles burn. I want to just focus right now on the first Rashi. I want to share with you an interesting thought on the first Rashi. Rashi says, L'menitzvacha parshas ha-menorah l'parshas ha-nesiyim. Last week's parsha ended with the gift that the Nesiyim brought to the Mishkan for the Chanukah HaMizbeach, for the inauguration of the Mizbeach. Now we have a discussion about the menorah. So Rashi asks, why is this discussion of menorah right after the part of the Torah discussing the gifts of the princes? And Rashi brings an answer, when Aaron saw the dedication of the princes, he felt very bad. That he himself did not participate in this dedication. Vayhuvelay shift, they not hear nor his tribe, referring to the tribe of Levi. Amar laHakadosh Baruch Hu, the Rebbeinu Shlom said to him, Chayecha, I swear to you, Shalcha Gadol Mishalahem, by your life, yours is greater than theirs. Shatamav Kumeitav Vasaneiros, for you will light and clean out the candles. So we're not going to focus on what exactly was bothered Aaron, what exactly is the answer to Aaron. But rather to share with you a point that my friend makes in his book on the Parsha from Rebecca Weinberg's Atzal Shiva of Yeshivas Nair Yisrael in Baltimore, where Rashi says that Aaron felt bad because not he nor his tribe were involved in this dedication. He didn't bring a gift. There was no representative of the tribe of Levi bringing the gift. So Rebbe Weinberg was bothered by the fact that it would sound like Aaron felt that he should have been the one representing the tribe of Levi. He wasn't involved, and the tribe of Levi wasn't involved. So Weinberg was bothered by, is Aaron really the one in charge of the tribe of Levi?
Should have been Moshe.
Aaron was kind of on his own. He was the Kohen Gadol, the Kohanim. They were separated from the tribe of Levi. Moshe was still part of the tribe of Levi. So, if anybody should have been representative of the tribe of Levi, it would seem, as Barry just pointed out, that it should be Moshe. Why did Aaron think that he should be the one representing the tribe of Levi? It's true, Kohanim come from Levim, but the Kohanim were separated from the tribe of Levi, and Moshe is still part of the tribe of Levi. So it should be Moshe, not Aaron. And he said, we see from here that no, Moshe could not be the representative of the tribe of Levi. That's because once Moshe became the leader of the Jewish people, he now represents everyone. It's not like I represent everyone, but I still have a special place, or I still do things for my tribe. If you have now been elevated as a leader over the klal, over the lead over many, then at that point you now belong to everyone. You don't belong to only your origins, where you came from. You belong to everyone, and therefore Aaron felt that Moshe can't represent the tribe of Levi. It's true, he's part of the tribe of Levi, he comes from the tribe of Levi, but he's a leader of the Jewish people, has to represent everyone. He can't be representing everyone and especially one. And therefore, Aaron saw himself as the Kohen Gadol, even though he was the Kohen Gadol, but Aaron saw himself as the one that should have been representing the tribe of Levi. But the point Rav Weinberg made was that once Moshe Rabbeinu became a leader of the Jewish people, there was no more any time that now he still has some kind of special connection with his tribe in the sense of leadership. Once he's a leader for everyone. He belongs to everyone. And that can be very relevant to, in general, when a person takes a leadership position. How he now belongs to all those that he leads, and not just those, and he doesn't just or have any special connection to his origins. Not to take away from his origins, but in a leadership role, his leadership has to be for everyone, and not in any kind of specialty for one over the other, although that's where he originated from. Okay, that's this one to start off with that short thought. Now I'm going to ask you to turn a couple of pages. And go to page 788. Take a look at 788, Pasuk Yud. This is Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud, chapter 11, verse 10. Vayishma Moshe Sa'am Ba'echel Mishpachaysav. Moshe heard the people crying with their families. Ishla Fesach Aloi. Each person at the opening of his tent. Vayicharaf Hashem Ma'oid. Hashem became very angry. Uvenei Moshe Ra'an. The eyes of Moshe, it was bad. Now, the beginning of the parak talks about how the Jewish people are complaining about the man. They're tired of the man. They'd like to go back to their old ways in Egypt when they had a variety of food, and they're tired of the man. And then the pasuk tells us that Moshe heard the people crying with their families at the by the opening of their tents. Vayomer Moshe l'Hashem, Moshe says to Hashem, Lama ri'oitz l'avdecha, why have you done bad with your servant? Lama lo matzesachem beinecha, why have I not found favor in your eyes? Lo suves masakolam azeh olai, to place the load, the burden of this of the nation on me. Did I carry these people? Did I give birth to them? That you tell me, carry them in your bosom. As the nurse carries the suckling on the land that you swore to his fathers. From where will I have flesh to give this entire nation? They cried to me saying, give us flesh that we can eat. The Jewish people wanted a variety of food. They wanted to go back to meat. I am not able to carry this nation by myself. It's too difficult for me. And if like this you are doing to me, kill me. If I found favor in your eyes, I should not see in my evil. Now, when you read this last pasuk, it sounds like Moshe is so distraught that Moshe says to Hashem, if you don't give me help, and you want to leave me being the one in charge alone, then just take my life, because I can't make it. That's the way you would read the wording. Yeah. Rashi has a different explanation. That actually, because of the Jewish people's complaints, Rashi says, Hashem showed the punishment to Moshe, the Jewish people will be receiving. And on that, Moshe says, "Imkacha, if you do like this, hareini no haroik, kill me, and I shouldn't see my evil." Rashi says, "The wording 'I shouldn't see my evil' but it doesn't mean my evil; it means the evil that will befall the Jewish people." Moshe is not saying to Hashem that if you do this to me, kill me instead, but rather, if this is what you're going to do to punish the Jewish people for what they've been doing, then take me away because I don't want to see it. So now, what's Hashem's response? This is what we're going to start focusing on. Vayimra Hashem el Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Esfali Shivim Ish Mezikna Yisrael, gather to me 70 people that you know from the elders of Israel. Asher Yodata, that you know, Ki Hem Zikna Ya'am V'Shaitro, that they are the elders of the nation and its officers. V'kach to Oysem Eloi Omoyed, you shall take them to the tent of meeting, meaning to the Mishkan, to the tabernacle, V'Zyatzvu Sham Imach, and they will stand there with you. I shall come down, I shall descend, and I will speak with you there. And I will increase, I will make great from the spirit that is upon you, and I will place it on them. Rashi says, I will prophesize to you, then from the spirit of prophecy that rests on you, that spirit of prophecy will now spread to these 70 men. They shall carry with you the load of the people, and you shall not carry it alone. Okay, so let's take a look at Rashi. How does Rashi explain this? So Rashi explains, who are these elders that Moshe is referring to, that Hashem is referring to, rather? It says, you know them. You know they are the elders of the people. What does that mean, you know them? So Rashi says that means, Oysen sha'ato makar shenismanu aleim shreit min mitzrayim avaydus perach. The people that you will be choosing from to become your assistants, and as many call it, to become the Sanhedrin, the high court of the Jewish people, these are the people that back in Parsha Shmos we read how there were these Jewish taskmasters that were appointed over the Jewish slaves, and they were responsible to produce X amount of bricks per day. And when the Jewish people were not supplied with the straw anymore, they had to go ahead and gather the straw themselves and still produce that amount of bricks. These officers who were in charge had mercy on them, didn't make them fill the quota, and they were beaten for it. So Rashi says these are the people that you will now appoint over the Jewish people. They will be now your assistants. Ata yisam yismanu b'gdulasan, now they should be appointed in the Jewish people's glory. Kedarach shenitztaru b'tzarasan, as they suffered with their suffering. These people suffered for the Jewish people. Now they will now be risen above to serve the Jewish people. They suffered for the Jewish people, and now they will be appointed as their leaders. So those are the people that you will be appointing, or they'll be coming from that group of people. And what are you going to do? Bring them to the Ohel Moed. I will send out a prophecy to you, and it will spread on to them. So Rashi tells us, what's the purpose of this? What is the purpose of these people coming and standing together with Moshe? So Rashi, in the bottom two lines of the first column, of the right column in Rashi, V'siatzvu shamimach, they will still stand there with you. Kadei shiiru Yisrael, v'inhagu behem gedula v'kaved. The Jewish people should see what's going to happen, and then show them greatness and respect. The Yomer, they will say, Chaviv and Elu, beloved are these people, Shenichnesu im Moshe, that they now entered with Moshe, L'shmaya dibur mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to hear the words from the mouth of Hashem. Meaning, what I understand in Rashi is, and Rashi then continues and says, Hashem says, I'm going to come down. Rashi says, I'm going to come down, I'm going to speak with you, not with them. And then I will from you, and then from you, Rashi says, and then I will increase, I will then make them great. From the Spirit on you, it'll go on to them. So Hashem is speaking to Moshe alone, and then from the Spirit of Prophet rests on Moshe, it'll now go on to the people, it'll now go on to the 70 elders. And Rashi, we just read, telling us, what was the purpose of this whole bit? What was the purpose of this? So Rashi says the purpose was that the Jewish people should respect them. To me, it sounds like they didn't need this to be appointed. They could have been appointed, and they would have been appointed. And they're, once they're appointed, they could have been assistants. They could have been the leaders of the Jewish people under Moshe. They could have been assisting Moshe. But Hashem wanted the Jewish people to respect them. And how are they now gain special respect for them? If they were now invited to hear a Nevuah together with Moshe, the Jewish people would see, look how beloved they are, look how important they are, and then they'll give them the highest respect. That's what I see here in Rashi. That it wasn't necessarily to have this happen to them for the purpose of their becoming the assistants of Moshe, as much as actually giving them more respect in the eyes of the Jewish people. Okay. Now, I want to share with you what the Das HaKein Mabalei HaTosfos says on this pasuk. The Das HaKein Mabalei HaTosfos, if you know, when you learn Gemara, on one side of the Gemara you have Rashi, on the other side you have the Tosfos. Those were the French, those were the famous scholars of France. Some of them were grandchildren of Rashi, and they were the next leaders. They're called the Tosafists, they're the Bali Tosfos. They're the ones, they lived in France, I believe, in France and Germany, and they were major commentators and on the Gemara, and also establishing halacha. So there is a sefer, the Das Gemara Tosfos, which I guess really a compilation of thoughts from these sages of the Bali Tosfos on the Chumash. So on these words, Esfali Shivim Ish, the Das Kedem asks two questions. What does it mean, Esfali? Hashem says, gather to me. What's the to me? It should say, gather the 70 people, bring them to the Ohel Moed, bring them to the Mishkan. What's gather to me? Next question is, the Pasuk says, Shivim Ish. 70, Ish means man. It should say, Shivim Anashim, 70 men. Now, we do find places where the singular form is used for the plural, but there's usually a reason for it. So why here does it say Shivim Ish, 70 men, instead of 70 man, so it's literally, instead of 70 Anashim, 70 men? Says the Das Kedem, that Hashem was saying that the people that you are choosing, I want them to be Li, I want them to be Doim and Li, similar to me. In what way? Similar to me in the way that I am referred to as Ish. Where is Hashem referred to as Ish? We say it every morning in Az Yashir, Hashem Ish Melchama. Hashem is a man of war. And these people have to be similar to me in this facet of Ish. That they should be like me in the sense of Hashem Ish Melchama, Hashem is a man of war. But it doesn't stop there. There was someone else called Ish that I want you to be like. And who's that? Moshe Rabbeinu, in this end of this week's parsha, V'ha'ish Moshe anav ma'ayid. The man Moshe was very humble. So by using the word ish, the message to Moshe is that the qualities of these leaders is that they have to be similar to me in regard in the way that I was called ish, Hashem ish mochama Hashem, a man of war. And they have to be similar to you in the way that you're called, the man Moshe was very humble. They have to have both these traits. They have to have the trait of Hashem ish mochama Hashem, man of war. They have to have the trait of humility of the man Moshe who is humble. Which means a leader has to have both traits. He's got to be humble in the sense that he shouldn't get caught up in himself, shouldn't get too much, he shouldn't get too caught up in who he is and become haughty and arrogant. He has to be humble. But being humble doesn't mean that he doesn't get up and fight the wars that he has to fight. When he has to stand up for what's right, when he has to fight for what's right, he has to fight for what's right. Hashem ish mochama, Hashem is a man of war. Hashem fights for what's right, and they have to be similar to Hashem, that they have to get ready to have to be ready to fight. At the same time, they have to be humble, not to let anything get to their head. But at the same time that you're humble, be ready to fight the wars that you have to do. Be ready to get up and do what you have to do. The Chafetz Chaim was a very humble person. But if something had to get done, he picked himself up, went to a city, got up in front of everyone, and told them what to do wrong. He was a very humble person. But humility doesn't say, I don't have to recognize who I am and I don't have to do what I have to do. It means I don't get full of myself. I don't credit myself. But it doesn't mean that I don't do what I'm supposed to do, even if it means acting seemingly not humble, by getting up and fighting when I need to. But those were the traits that Hashem was saying to Moshe, you have to see in these people, and these are really traits that every leader has to have. Every leader in any kind of position they may be in leadership. They got to be ready to be strong and humble at the same time. Humble means I don't become haughty, I don't become arrogant, but I don't let them stop me from standing up where I have to stand up for. And every time I come to this Das Kein Bala Teisvis, I always think about my father, which is really what I said about my father when I eulogized him. He was a very humble man, very humble. But the stories he told us, not to brag, but the stories he told us about when he had to stand up for something, I mean, he really stood up for things. When he worked as a mashgiach, there was no monkeying around. He got up and he laid the law and he made sure that everything was done right. And as much as some of those workers there that were a lot bigger than him would get upset, it didn't matter to him. He stood up for what was right. When he was a young man, when he was single, and he was basically received a smicha from YU, and then he was kind of traveling around. He lived in Savannah, Georgia. He lived in Miami. It's a long time, Miami Beach. This is talking about in the 50s. When he was in Savannah, he wouldn't need anybody's house because of kashrus. He wouldn't need anybody's house. He was a single guy all by himself. But he would not need anybody's house that was not Shemesh Shabbos. And I said to my father, what'd you eat? He said to me, I went fishing. But I remember he told us there was one person in town very upset with him, a very prominent person in town that was very upset. But it didn't make a difference to him. He wasn't going to budge with that. When it came to a point later on that he was working in a Jewish camp, and I don't know if he was officially the rabbi of the camp or again in charge of the kashrus of the camp, but when there were things on Shabbos that the owner of the camp was pushing the kids to do, he stood up and he said, you can't, he stood up to him. It could have cost his job big time, but he stood up for what was right. And when he was teaching in Miami Beach and there was a bas mitzvah, bar mitzvah, and everybody and all the kids got up to dance, boys and girls, socially, he would sit there, he'd find himself a corner and sit down on a chair. And then one story was that one of the students went over to him and said, Rabbi, why aren't you dancing? So he explained to them why. Not allowed. So all the kids stopped dancing. And all the parents got really upset. But that's who he was. He never stood down. When something had to be said, when something could be stuck. Nope. He was not.
How old was he in America?
He was 14. But he was, again, in all these situations. Again, he was a very humble, a very nice, very peaceful man. But when he had to set up, when he had to stand up for something, he did it. And every time I come onto this, this parsha, this idea, I always think about what I said about him. Yeah, I just wanted to share that with you, if you don't mind. Okay. Now, the Bali Teisvis also, again, on the words I show you that that you know, mentions the same thing as Rashi does. But I want to share with you how he says it. They were the ones that were beaten because of the Jewish people in Egypt, as the Pasuk says. The officers of the Jewish people were beaten, referring to the Jewish officers who did not force the Jewish people to produce the quota. They are the ones being chosen to be the leaders. Why? Because whoever gives up of himself for the Jewish people, Zoicha the Gedula merits greatness, will recover honor, the Ruach HaKodesh, and to the spirit of holiness. If you give up of yourself, you're ready to give up of yourself, you're ready to sacrifice yourself for the Jewish people, as these officers did, that because of that, they merited greatness, honor, and prophecy. So I want to share with you now something, a very beautiful thing that I once heard that relates to this. It's not exactly this idea, maybe it is. Probably not, we probably could say it is. But it's a very, very poignant story about what it means to give up from oneself for the Jewish people. So in Eretz Yisrael, there is a Rosh Yeshiva, Reish Kailo, his name is Usher Weiss. Very prominent Rav in Eretz Yisrael. Tremendous Talmud Chacham. A man who goes around, who's connected with every group in Eretz Yisrael, Sephardim, Ashkenazim, Hasidim, Litvish, Hasidish, religious Zionist, you know, whatever, Dati Lumi, whatever you want to call it, whatever group it is, he's are giving shurim to them. Very, very prominent, very popular Rav. His shiurim are very well attended. He's a very good speaker. He's actually American born, and he speaks in excellent English. And he tell a story of, talk about his father. His father was a Holocaust survivor. And he tells of how his father arrived in Auschwitz-Birkenau on the first day of Shavuos, 1940-something. And it was on that day that he was separated from his parents and a number of his siblings. They were signaled to go to the gas chambers. Him and two brothers signaled to go work. And he found himself in Auschwitz-Birkenau. On the second day of Shavuos, the very next day, he heard that a Hasidic Rebbe arrived. His name was Rabbi Kasil Yehuda Halberstam. He was known as the Kleisenberger Rebbe. Kleisenberger Rebbe himself lost a wife and 11 children in the war, and he was very famous for surviving the war, surviving the camps, being involved in the DP camps, helping people, strengthening people, rebuilding his Hasidus, which is tremendous now in American Eretz Yisrael. And so Rabbi Weiss's father, his name was Moshe Weiss, had never met the Kleisenberger Rebbe, but he heard of him. And when he heard that he arrived and he was in the next barracks, he very much wanted to now become close and connected with him. So in the middle of the night, he stole out of his barracks and convinced someone to switch places with him so he could now be in the same barracks with the Kleisenberger Rebbe. I'm assuming it was too early to keep track of who was where, so he was able to do it. And the next morning, he goes up to Kleisenberger Rebbe, and he told him the story that he, you know, worked very hard to switch from one barracks to another barracks so that he should be able to be with the Rebbe. So the Rebbe looked at him and said, "And what's it going to help you? It's not going to help you." So Moshe Weiss said, "Of course it's going to help me." The Rebbe said, "How's that?" Moshe Weiss said, "Because now I have someone to speak and learning with. I could speak in Gemara with now." And the Rebbe said, "Bachel, you're in Auschwitz. You're speaking and learning?" And Moshe Weiss said, "Of course. How else do you think we're going to survive? How else are you going to make it through this if we don't speak and learning?" And the Kleisenberger Rebbe hugged them and kissed him, and from then on, they were inseparable. And they went through Auschwitz, and they went through different places. They landed up going into the Warsaw Ghetto and cleaning up after the uprising. And eventually they landed up at a camp which was liberated by the Americans. After the camp was liberated by the Americans, the Kleisenberger made an announcement. There were many dead bodies strewn all over the fields around that area. And he asked for a volunteer to go and be able to pick up these bodies and bring them to a Jewish burial. And nobody but Moshe Weiss volunteered. But they went together. They had an army jeep and an army driver, and they went all around the area picking up the dead bodies strewn all over the fields to give them Kfuras Yisrael, Jewish burial. And Rabbi Weiss says that after they were finished taking care of the dead, they started working on who was left alive. And they built mikvahs and yeshivas and girls' schools to build up and bring back, give the Yidden some kind of a Jewish life. At one point, the Kleisenberg Rebbe turns to Moshe Weiss and he says to him, what would you like? What would you like? And Moshe Weiss says to the Rebbe, he says, I want a bracha, that I have children who are Talmidei Chachamim. That's what I want. And the Kleisenberg gave him a bracha that he should have children that will light up the world with the light of Torah. Now, at one point of all this involvement in trying to help people after the war, Moshe Weiss went over to Kleisenberg Rebbe and he said, I'm done. I'm done. I haven't opened up a Gemara in 2 years. I want to go back to learn. So the Rebbe said to him, Moshe, you have no understanding of what Mesiras Nefesh is. You have no understanding of what self-sacrifice is. Mesiras Nefesh is the word that we use for self-sacrifice, as we read here. Here it says, gives over himself. But the common phrase that's used for self-sacrifice is Mesiras Nefesh, giving over your soul, giving over of the soul. So when the Kleisenberger heard him say, I want to go back to learning, so the Kleisenberger said to him, you have no idea what Mesiras Nefesh is, self-sacrifice. So Moshe Weiss take it back. Like, what do you mean? What have we been doing for the past 2 years? What have we been doing together for all these years? And the Kleisenberg Rebbe said to him, no, you don't understand. You think by giving up food and drink and comfort, that's Mesiras Nefesh. That's giving up your soul. That's not giving up your soul. That's Mesiras Haguf. That's giving up your body. That's giving up your physicality. You want to know what it means, Mesiras Nefesh, giving up your soul? It means giving up your Gemara on behalf of Jewish people. And with that, Moshe Weiss went back to assisting the Rebbe. And eventually they both made families, they settled down, they built communities, they built Torah. And Rebbe Weiss has a son that actually lights up the world with the light of Torah. So just as here we read this Das Kanim about the reward that these people received for being Meiser Atzma, for giving themselves over for the Jewish people, I wanted to mention this story about what the highest level of giving yourself up is. There's even a higher level of being beaten for the Jewish people, and that is giving up from your spirituality on behalf of the Jewish people. And as it says here, that a person who does that merits greatness, honor, and the spirit of holiness. A person who gives up even their nefesh, even their soul, even their spiritual life for the Jewish people, also, of course, merit this kind of reward. Okay, let's now read on. So, Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. Let's read it again. We read this, let's read it again. V'yaradati v'dibarti m'chasham, and I shall come down, I will speak to you. So this v'yaradati, I shall come down. Why does it have to say that? It's just say I'll speak with you. Why does it need to say I will come down? So the Askein of Baal Tosfa says that by saying I will come down, Hashem is saying that this day is beloved to me like the day that the Torah was given. As it says, ki b'yoyim ha'shlishi, on day 3, Yared Hashem al Har Sinai, Hashem came down on Har Sinai. By Hashem is saying, V'yaradi, I shall come down. That's how Hashem was saying, my coming down today here, what I'm going to do, I'm going to come down to you and have that now spread onto the others of Canaan. This is beloved to me like the day I gave the Torah on Mount Sinai. Very interesting. Now, what happens then? V'atzalti min haruach asher olecha. And I will increase from the spirit that is upon you, and I'll place it on them. So, right, the Torah, so that what's interesting here is, Hashem doesn't just say, I will come down, I'll speak to you, and I will give them prophecy, I will give them the spirit. But rather, it says, I will basically make them great from the spirit that's on you, and I'll place it on them. It has to start from Moshe, and from Moshe it goes to them. Why is this the path? So the Das HaKeinim here says, explains what a mashal, what a parable. So it says there was a king. The king had a beautiful orchard, and he hired someone to watch it. You're going to be in charge of watching my orchard. He hired him. He set a price. He set a payment for it. And this person started doing his job. Comes a certain point, the shomer says, the guard says to the king, I can't do this all by myself. I can't handle it all by myself. We need to bring in other people that can help me. So the king says, look, I gave you the orchard to watch, and I gave you, and I made up the payment for you to watch it. Okay? So I gave you the orchard to watch, I gave you the payment to do it, and now you're telling me we have to bring in others? I hired you to do it. I paid you to do it. Now you're going to bring others to help you? So guess what? I'm not paying them. You're going to pay them. If you want others to come help you, you're going to have to pay them. Because when I hired you to do the job. I paid you to do the job. And now if you want helpers, you got to pay for it. So that's a good point, right? What does Hashem... So too, what happened here? This is what Hashem said to Moshe. L'cha nasati ruach v'das. To you I have given spirit and knowledge. L'farnes banai. To lead and to take care of my children. V'loi ha'yisi. Mevakesh acherim. I didn't want anybody else. V'ata amarta lo yachal levati. And now you're saying, I can't do it myself. Chayecha lo yitlu mishali. They're not going to take from me. But rather, I will give them from the spirit that's on you. So the parable seems to be saying that Hashem says to Moshe, look, I gave you to lead them, and I'm ready to let, and I gave you the ability to lead them. I gave you the spirit, I gave you the knowledge to lead them. Now you say I can't do it on my own. All right, you want help? I'm not giving them the spirit. It'll have to come from you. Now, from this approach, we see that it seemed like the spirit was necessary for them to become Moshe's helpers. And Hashem says, I'm not just going to directly give them the spirit. The spirit is going to have to come from you. It'll be from the spirit I give you. Now you'll take that spirit, now will come from you and go to them. Sounds like that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do something right. And that in some way or another, the same way in the parable, right? I'm basically going to lose some of my pay if I bring in other people. It seems like Hashem says to Moshe, I'm not giving them the spirit, it's going to come from you. But the Das Kedim doesn't stop there. And even so, Moshe was not missing anything. Moshe did not lose out on anything. And I'll prove it to you. Because 40 years later, Hashem said to Moshe, take Yeshua, and take from your glory unto him. From the fact that it says take from your glory and basically give from your glory to Yeshua, that implies that his glory was intact. This is compared to a candle that was lit. Now you went in and you lit hundreds of candles from it. Does anything happen to the original fire? No, nothing happens to the original fire. You can light many candles from the original fire, and then the original fire is not affected. And that's what happened to Moshe. Moshe's like a candle. Yes, it's from the spirit that's on him that's going on to the rest of the Zekanah, the rest of the elders, doesn't affect Moshe. So help me here. First, Das Kedim says that Hashem says to Moshe, I told you to do it yourself. So the spirit is not going to come from me, it's going to come from you. Similar to the story with the guard, who now the king says, I'm not paying, you have to pay. But then it says, but Moshe didn't lose out on anything. So what happened here? Hashem told him one thing and it didn't happen? Hashem seems to be saying, you're going to be losing from your spirit, but then, and similar to the parable, it would seem, but then at the end, Moshe doesn't lose out on anything. So what's going on? Was it serious? Was it not serious? And also, if it seems that Hashem was not pleased with Moshe asking for help, then we just said before that Das Kedim just said before that it says V'yaradati, Hashem says I will descend because this day is beloved to me like the day I came down and gave the Torah to Har Sinai, What's so beloved about it? According to this Das Kanim, Hashem is even happy with it. Hashem didn't want Moshe to have assistance. Moshe should have been doing it himself. So why does it mean, so what's make this day so happy, so beloved, like the day that Hashem descended on Har Sinai to give the Torah? So, I'd like to suggest, I'm not 100% that this is right. It could fit. And that is that perhaps this, when Hashem told, let's go back to the parable, right? You go back to the parable. So the guard says to the king, I can't do it myself, I need help. So the king says to the guard, well, if you need help, you pay for them, you hire them. So what's the end of the story? Is there an end to this story, to this parable? Well, there's two possibilities. Either the guard says, all right, what am I going to do? I just can't do it myself. Or the guard says, you know what? I'll give it another try. Give it another try. Right? It's kind of a motivation, right? The king says, look, you're going to lose money from it. I'm not going to lose from it. I'm not paying anymore. You're going to have to pay. All right. So maybe now he'll change his mind. Okay. Perhaps when Hashem said to Moshe, I need help. Hashem says to Moshe, well, if you're going to need help, right, you're going to have to give up from your spirit. Perhaps Moshe could have turned around and said, all right, I'll give it a shot. Try to go back to it. You're not happy with Ribbono Shel Olam? I'll go back to it. But Moshe didn't do that. And you know why he didn't do that? Moshe didn't do that because when Moshe was coming to Hashem and saying, I can't do this myself, as we saw in Rashi, Rashi says, Moshe didn't say, I don't want to see my evil kill me, I don't want to see my evil because the job's too much. It was when Hashem showed Moshe the punishment that would come to the Jewish people, Moshe says, I don't want to see that. Moshe was doing this for the Jewish people. Moshe was saying, I can't carry it by myself. It's not about it's too hard for me, and therefore it's difficult to me. I can't handle the stress. But rather, this is not good for the Jewish people. The Jewish people, it's not good just for me to be the Jewish people. There should be other people that are lower than me, assisting me, that should be dealing with the Jewish people also. Moshe wasn't complaining about himself. Moshe was actually complaining on behalf of the Jewish people. And perhaps this was a test that Hashem was giving him. Hashem was giving him a test when Hashem said, you know what? You're going to have to give up your spirit if you're going to want assistance. And the test was, what would Moshe Rabbeinu's reaction be? His reaction was, fine, I'll give up from my spirit because I'm not doing it for me. I'm doing it for the Jewish people. And then what happened? Hashem didn't take it away. Because at the end, since he was willing to give up for the Jewish people, he didn't lose out. And that would work well with the idea that Hashem is saying, it works with the fact that the Das Kanim says that this day was joyous to Hashem like the day of the giving of the Torah on Har Sinai. When Hashem was on Har Sinai, he rested prophecy on everyone. And now that he was going to do this, not just on Moshe, but on the 70 elders, Hashem was very happy for that. But what happened before all that, what happened at the same time was the fact that Hashem tested Moshe. And tested Moshe to see what's Moshe's reaction going to be when Hashem tells him, you're going to have to give it from your spirit. You're going to have to give it from your level of prophecy for these people. What's his reaction going to be? And when Moshe's reaction was, I'm willing to give it up because I'm willing to do it for the Jewish people, that is when Hashem said, it doesn't have to be that way. You're not going to lose out. Because since he was ready to give up for the Jewish people, Moshe Rabbeinu was now able to, again, it was going to come through Moshe. It was the spirit of prophecy, as the Pasuk says, is going through Moshe unto these men. But it didn't take away from Moshe, since he was willing to do it all on behalf of the Jewish people. So perhaps that's the meaning, that's what happened here. At first, it seems that Hashem is saying, you're going to lose out, and then he doesn't lose out. But other commentaries bring down half of what the Das Kanim brings down, that Hashem said to Moshe. When Hashem says to Moshe, I'm going to increase from the spirit that's on you and put it on them, that Hashem is not directly giving them the spirit, but it's going through Moshe, they only mention the first half, that Hashem says to Moshe, you know, I give you to do it. The Chizkuni says, all right. Ani Omer Lecha, I said to you, At Hadadin is Ami, you will judge my people, V'nasati Lecha Chachma L'dainam, and I'll give you wisdom to judge them. V'sruchi Nasati Olecha, and I gave you my spirit. V'ato Amat Alucha Levadi, and now you're saying I can't do it my own? Chayachi Nasen Lehem Meruchacha. So now it's going to come from your spirit. Doesn't say about the end. Doesn't say anything at the end about, and Moshe at the end didn't lose out. So it seems, according to them, that Moshe was rebuked for this, and there was some kind of a difference, some kind of something about the fact that it didn't go directly from Hashem, but it went from Moshe to them. And because of that, there was some kind of a difference. Now we'll see there was a difference between the spirit that this spirit of prophecy that came onto these men. But from what we'll see is that would it have come directly from the Ribbono Shel Olam onto them? It would have been something stronger. That other came through Moshe, it wasn't as strong. But that seems to be a rebuke to Moshe, in the sense that you should be doing this alone. Now you want other people to help, so it's going to come from you. I'm not sure according to them, so what does that mean? Moshe did lose out? That his level of prophecy did go down? Maybe we should say that if not for this, Moshe Rabbeinu's level of prophecy would have gone even higher, and instead it stayed the same, because now that spirit was coming from them, from him to them, perhaps. But what I'm trying to say in the Das Akeinim isn't going to work in the Chizkuni and the others, who just basically say that Hashem seemingly rebuked Moshe for wanting help, and because of that, Hashem didn't give the spirit directly to them, but rather it went through Moshe onto them.
How did that tie to Yisro? Remember, Yisro asked, told Moshe, you can't do Yisro.
Yeah, this seems to be different functions. Seems to be different functions. It's a good question. It's a very good question. Didn't Moshe Rabbeinu have all those judges? But it would seem that the judges, the only answer I can give you right now, it's a very good question. I'm just saying, off the top of my head, the answer I would try to say is that that was judging. And then you're dealing with the leadership. In the sense of, Moshe Rabbeinu was saying that with all the complaints of the Jewish people, that somehow or other means that I'm not leading properly. It didn't seem to be a question of halach or not. It's a question of leadership, because they're complaining about, we're tired of the man, and we're tired of this, and we need meat, right? So Moshe sees that somehow as something about something that is a lack in his leadership that he can't handle. So that's not judges, that's leadership. And Moshe Rabbeinu feels that he can deal with that better if there are people helping him along. So again, it could be two different functions. Okay. Now, so this is what Hashem says to Moshe. This is what I'm going to do. So now let's turn to page 792 and take a look at Pasuk Chav Dalet, verse 24. Vayetze Moshe went out, Vayidaber ha'am, and he spoke to the people, Eis Divrei Hashem, all the words of Hashem. Vayesav Shivim Ish Vizikney ha'am, and he gathered together 70 men from the elders of the people, Vayamed Oysam Saviva Yisrael, and he stood them around the tent. Vayamed Hashem Ba'anan, Hashem came down in a cloud, Vayidaber Eilav, and he spoke to him. Vayotzel Min HaRuach, and he increased some of the spirit, Asher Alav, that was on Moshe, Vayitain, and he put it Al-Shivim Isha Zakenim, on the 70 elders. Vayikroyach Aleim HaRuach, and it was when the Spirit rested upon them. Vayisnabu, they prophesied, Velo Yosefu, and they did not Yosefu. Rashi says it either means they did not continue. This was the one and only time that they prophesied. And others say Velo Yosefu means they did not stop. They continued being prophets. Now, Vayisharu Shnei Anoshim B'machane, two people remained in the camp. Two people who were supposed to join at some point with the other 70, they didn't go. Shema Echad Eldad, the name of one was Eldad, the Shema Sheni Medad, the name of the other was Medad. Vatanach Aleim Aruach, the spirit rested on them. Vehema Baksuvim, they were for the ones on the list to be chosen from. Vloyatze Ayala didn't go out to the tent. Vayistab Machada, and they prophesied in the camp. Were not at the Ohel Moed, they were not at the tent together with everyone else when the prophecy rested on them and they prophesied at the Mishkan. They did not go out, they did not join the rest of them. Rashi says because of their humility, but they prophesied in the camp, they prophesied where they were. Vayaretz hanar vayagad l'moshe vayimar. So a lad ran and told the Moshe, saying, Eldad umedin misnab b'machana. Eldad umedin a prophesying in the camp. Vayan Yehoshua benun mesharetz Moshe v'bechura vayimar. And Yehoshua responded and said, Adoni Moshe, my master Moshe, kloim, incarcerate them, jail them. They're not acting respectfully, says Rashi, because guess what they're saying in their prophecy? They're saying Moshe is going to die and not enter the land of Israel, and Yeshua is going to lead them in. That is extremely disrespectful. Kloim, incarcerate them, jail them, figure out what's going on with them. Moshe says to Yeshua, are you being zealous for me? Umitin kolam Hashem neviim, let it be that all the nation of God are prophets. Kiden Hashem esruch hayalam, that Hashem should put his spirit upon them. Hashem says to Yeshua, don't get so worked up. So they're saying a prophecy, and they're saying they were supposed to say prophecy by the Mishkan, say prophecy in the camp. It's okay. Otherwise, Hashem should attend this prophecy, his prayer of prophecy over all the Jewish people wherever they are. Okay. So we're running out of time. So I want to share with you a very interesting thing that is said about these two people, Eldad and Medad. Right? Good question. It doesn't say, right? Doesn't say their father's name, doesn't say what child they're from, just two men named Eldad and Medad. So who are they? So there's a couple of really interesting midrashim. I'm going to tell you what the Das Kena brings down. Das Kena brings down Eldad and Medad were Moshe's brothers. Now how could that be?
Brother-in-laws or brothers?
Brothers. Now how could that be? The answer is, we just read before at the beginning of the class that Moshe heard the Jewish people crying l'mishpachaysav with their families. Rashi says what that means is that when the Torah was given, there were certain relatives that became forbidden to marry, and they had to separate. The Jewish people were crying. They were crying over their families. They were crying over the breakup of their families. They were married to relatives that they couldn't be married to anymore because the Torah had forbidden it, and therefore they had to divorce them. So they were crying about it. But this is what was happening. Once the Torah was given, and all these types of marriage with relatives became forbidden, so the people divorced the relatives. Moshe's parents were aunt and nephew. Yocheved was actually Amram's aunt, because Yocheved was the daughter of Levi, and Amram was the grandson of Levi. Yocheved was his aunt. And Amram and Yocheved are one of the whole discussions about if they kept the Torah before the Torah was given, and how did they do this? How did they get married like this? But the point was, though, that once the Torah was given, Amram divorced her. And Amram went and married another woman. And he had two children with her. And their names were Eldad Umedad. You know why? Because Eldad, which is Aleph Lam and Dalad spells Dod, like uncle, or, you know, that kind of relationship. Eldad, Aldad, no aunt. Umedad, from aunt, in place of the aunt. Okay? These were all the children that he had from the other wife. Okay? Now, there's a big question on this, a really big question. I have an answer for it, but it's just a huge question. Okay, that means Eldad and Umedad were born when? After the Torah was given. How long do you think this is after the Torah was given? Not that long. That makes Eldad and Umedad little children, and they're prophesizing? Question. Don't have an answer for it. The Das Kenem continues. And he says, and I found a kuntris, I found a notebook, Rav Amram, from a sage named Rav Amram. And it is, and he brought from a Rav Hillel, Shoyim Eretz Yisrael. He said, this Rav Hillel was from Eretz Yisrael. And this Rav Hillel wrote, Ani Hillel, I Hillel, Ra'isi Kever Eldad Umedad, I saw the graves of Eldad Umedad in Eretz Yisrael. For Yakasav Aleim, and was written upon them, Eldad Umedad Achi Arim Mina Av Loi Mina Ein. And on the stone it says, Eldad Umedad, the brothers of Arim, from the father, not from the mother. So according to this Rev Amram, you see, this is who Eldad Umedad were. They were Arim's brothers, from the father, not from the mother. Another question that needs to be asked is, well, he wasn't just a brother of Aaron. It was Moshe's brother too. Why is not Moshe mentioned? Question. Okay. One last thought. Who are Eldad and Medad? Elden Amedad, it seems to be there a tradition that there actually were people mentioned 40 years later. 40 years later, before the Hashem tells Moshe the names of the princes of the tribes will divide up the land when they enter the land of Eretz Yisrael. One's name was Elidad ben Kislein, that's Eldad, and Medad is Kamuel ben Shaftan. So actually, why are they called Eldad and Medad here? I don't know. But the Medrash is saying that they were these people, which means that Eldad and Medad lived to enter the land of Israel, which may not be that questionable, because if they're really that young, then they weren't part of the decree from the spies. Okay. The only problem with this Medrash, and this is a question that the Vaskanim himself says, and that is, Amram was from the tribe of Levi. And these two were not from the tribe of Levi, because the tribe of Levi didn't have a prince dividing the land, didn't get a portion of the land. They're from different tribes. So it doesn't work. But the previous Medrash, it says, Vaskanim, you're right, it doesn't work. These two Medrashim can't work together. If they're the sons of Amram, they can't be these people. These people, they can't be the sons of Amram. Anyway, thank you for coming.
But could it be from the mother? If the mother didn't have men...